Well, it's nice to be back, and it's nice to be away seeing family, and it's nice to be on holiday, but it's nice to be back, isn't it? I was not at all sure what I should bring this morning, and even this morning I felt God challenge me. The last time that I preached, it was just after the Olympics. Do you remember? And I had a Union Jack vest on and was saying how much God had taught me about the Olympics. And I thought this morning, what about the Paralympics? And I was quite challenged because it's been harder watching the Paralympics. I don't know whether you found that, because right in front of our face is disability and suffering, isn't there? And we don't like that, do we? Seeing that there. And then when they tell the stories about the people, I was listening to an interview with Natalie Dutoy, and she was a swimmer before, and she had this accident. And I'm not sure whether it's one leg or two legs had to be amputated. And it brings it close, doesn't it? I found that quite challenging, and God was saying to me, you don't like suffering, do you? We don't like to face it. And there it is. And there are those, I don't know how you found it, seeing people, ready at the swimming, and just with two stumps, not two proper legs. And it's been really hard to have to see that. And yet, when you see that the, they've won and the medals, they're the same as us, aren't they? They're the same as the people in the Olympics. And sometimes we want to put them in a different category because we think, well, we don't want that to happen to us. But actually, what God was speaking to me about was, when things are difficult, what do we do when life is difficult? And I thought about people in the Bible that had difficult lives. House group, we've been doing Joseph, and he didn't have at all an easy life. Things were really tough for him. He was sold by his brothers, and even when he was a slave and worked really hard and did really well, lies were told about him, and he was thrown into prison. And even in prison, when he helped the person by interpreting the dream, and he said, remind people that I'm still here, and they forgot. It's really difficult, isn't it, when life's like that? And there were times when it was difficult for David, when Saul was just wanting to kill him. And he had opportunity to kill Saul, but he didn't. And I was looking at a psalm this morning, Psalm 55, lots and lots of times. Life was really difficult for him. Listen to my prayer, O God. Don't ignore my plea. Hear me and answer me. My thoughts trouble me and I'm distraught. And he goes on about how his heart is in anguish. The terrors of death assail him. And then later on he says, if an enemy were assaulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were raising himself against me, I could hide from him. But you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship as we walked with the throng at the house of God. That's really difficult, isn't it? When friends and people we trust turn against us. So life can be really difficult. And I thought, well, who in the Bible had the hardest life, the worst things to face? And I thought, actually, it was Jesus, wasn't it? Jesus had the most difficult things to face, and the most difficult thing, of course, was the crucifixion and the night that he was arrested. and he knew what was coming, what did he do? He went to the Garden of Gethsemane and he prayed to God. He asked his disciples to be with him, just to stay awake with him, but they didn't. And in his humanness, he said, "Oh God, take it from me. I don't want to go through this. Please take it away from me." And then he came back and said, "But if it's your will, I'll do it." And it says, at least in Luke's gospel, I noticed, that the angels strengthened him. God strengthened him at that desperate point and made him strong enough to face what he had to face. And he did face it. And sort of, we know that's what we should do when we have difficulties. When we have difficulties, we need to seek God. We sort of know that. And that's when we have to cling on to him. We listened to Heidi Baker at River Camp, and she's a missionary. She's been over 30 years in Mozambique. And lots of wonderful things have happened with her. There's been miracles of provision, miracles of healing, all sorts of things. And she said, people sometimes say to her, "Well, it's difficult to relate to you because everything always seems to happen right for you, you know." And she said, "Well, actually, I've had difficult times too." And she told us about how her husband had cerebral malaria, and his brain went, and he wasn't able to talk. He was like a gibbering idiot, she said. He was drooling just in bed most of the time. And this was somebody that had given their life to telling people about Jesus. And she said the boat that they used to go to the remote villages, that had sunk. And they'd had a light aeroplane too, and that had crashed, and they hadn't got the parts to put that together. And children in the home had died. And people in their church had died. And life was very difficult for her. And she said, "At that time, I just had to cling to Jesus." Yes, I don't know how I would be. We sort of know that's how we're supposed to behave. And we know the answers there. But very often we don't behave like that. When we face difficulties, sometimes we're just angry. I remember, and it's quite a long time ago, but I remember being really, really angry with God. And God can actually take it. You know, if that is your response to the difficulties, better be angry with God than angry with anyone else. Because if we're angry with other people, we can hurt them, can't we? But we can't hurt God. We can grieve the Holy Spirit, but God can take our anger. And in fact, he'd rather us say it how it is, because he knows how we're feeling anyway. Sometimes we do that, and it's all right to be angry. Our emotions aren't right or wrong. Being angry is okay as long as we don't sin. It says be angry and do not sin. So be angry, but don't hold on to that anger. Don't let it grow into bitterness. And so sometimes we're like that. Sometimes we just pretend that we're not hurt. I'm okay. And we know actually we're not. We're suppressing it. And then we distract ourselves, don't we? I don't know how you distract yourself when you don't want to face life. I mean, God's done things in me, so I don't go to drink or drugs and stuff like that now. But we all have different ways of distracting ourselves, don't we? So there are ungodly addictions, you know, which you will know the sort of things that people do just to take away the hurt. But there are sort of, I might almost say, godly addictions. That, you know, you can say, well, I'll do more for other people. Sometimes people lose themselves in serving others because they just don't want to face the hurt that's going on inside. And it, on the outside, it looks good. But inside, it maybe they just don't want to face reality. So there's all sorts of ways that we can pretend it's not happening. Because the difficulty is with that, it doesn't go away. And you know what happens? Something else happens and it triggers it. And we're back again into that hurt. Because we haven't dealt with it. It hasn't been healed. But there's the other thing that we can sometimes do is just become sad, depressed. It's not that we pretending that we're not hurt. We know we are hurt and life's difficult, but we just give up. And we neglect ourselves, and we can sometimes allow ourselves to be abused by other people because we have such low self-esteem. And that's not a good way either to deal with hurt and difficult circumstances. So I was thinking, well, how is it that we get from the wrong ways that we deal with difficult circumstances to the what we sort of know is the right way? Because we don't feel like doing the right way, and we know all these things are the wrong way. So how do we get to doing the right thing? And it reminded me of, I was reading a book actually, and it reminded me of a worksheet that I use in counselling, and I have used, and it's like a first aid kit. It's like a box, see, and it's got, you can't see. It's got a little red cross at the top because it's first aid. And you have all these shapes to fill in for things that make you feel a bit better. This is used in a secular context usually. It's just an emotional first aid kit. So I've done some here. Now, this is for me. Mooch in charity shops. That is a real big enjoyment. That makes me feel good. I was thinking about this morning, and I remember one time that I was in Stafford, and it was a really difficult time. It was a time when Dad had just had to go into a home. My sister was so depressed because of the death of her son. And Martin's mum was dying. And it was really difficult. I think it was that particular time. And I remember walking into Stafford by myself. Because I wanted to be alone. And didn't need anything in particular. And I thought, Lord, let's just go around the charity shops. Just help me find something really nice, Lord. I'd like something feminine, Lord. I'd like something that will make me feel better about myself. And I was chuntering onto the Lord like this. And we went in lots of charity shops together, as it were. And we did find something that really blessed me and made me feel better. And then, of course, my heart was full of praise that God cared about me. And it enabled me to find something that made me feel better about myself. you may not relate to that at all, but it enabled me to relate to God when I wasn't wanting to talk to him about what was actually hurting me. Because actually at that moment, it was a bit painful. And I didn't really want to talk about that even to God at that moment. But I was happy to talk to him about charity shops. I put here sitting in the sun. Love to do that. Love to feel the sun on me. I find it easier to praise God in the sunshine than when it's raining. And that is just me. I put here a bit of silliness. A bit of silliness goes a long way with me. And Carol, you are such a blessing. There. Because you sometimes bring that lightness that we need. Do you know what I'm saying? Sometimes we just need that lightness to help us to cope with what's going on. And I put also a good laugh. And the last time I had a really good laugh was one of the sermons at River Camp was such a hoot. I was killing myself laughing. And you know, afterwards I really needed that. Sometimes a laugh is really, really good. I used to love It's a Square World, Michael Benteen. That's going back. And Harry Worth. A candlelit bath. Love candlelit baths. Another thing, noticing flowers coming into bloom. If anybody's seen me in the garden, and I'm going around, oh, look at that! You know, something new in the garden just coming out can really, really bless me. And I just thank God for that flower. It does something for me. Visit to the hairdressers. At times, you know, when I'm just feeling a bit down and I think, oh, it's so long, it's a mess, it's awful. And I always thank God that I can afford the hairdressers. And I pray that the hairdresser will do a good job. And I pray afterwards if they, you know, I pray about things like that because it does make me feel good. Yeah, so I put down a cornetto. Oh, I enjoy a cornetto. I put down a smile from a grandchild. Yeah, and I put making something creative. You know, these are secular things, and there are spiritual things also that give me a boost. I'm not totally, yeah. But somehow, when we're feeling that life is hard, we need to think about the things, as long as they're not sinful, you know, that give us pleasure. Because through that, we can actually find God. As we, you know, perhaps have a cornetto and think, oh, Father, thank you. Thank you for people that have made the recipe, you know, for the cornetto that I'm actually enjoying. We can start to thank God and include God in the things that bring us pleasure. And it's a way of starting to open that conversation with God when actually we're finding it hard to open that conversation with God. Because maybe we're even feeling it's his fault. Maybe we're really hurting so much that we just can't bear to talk about it. And when we find these things that will speak to us, we can enjoy, and we thank God in that. It sort of bridges the gap a bit between what we know we should be doing and where we actually are. I don't know if that makes sense to any of you. But somehow we need to get towards just seeking God and facing the difficulties. But sometimes we need to do little steps in the way. Find little things that will bring us pleasure, that we can really, truthfully thank God for. Because maybe at the moment we just can't bear to think about the things that are hurting us. And so we're just making a way towards God. But I've put at the bottom of my notes in big capital letters, this is when the church needs to encourage one another. Because we can do things to help when life is feeling difficult, but when we're at church, this is when all the rest of us have the responsibility to notice those that seem a little down, those that seem discouraged. It's the job of all the rest of us to encourage one another. I do this little Celtic daily prayer, and it has a little verse from the Psalms and the New Testament and Old Testament. And the New Testament one this morning, it's Paul actually talking about praying in tongues, but he says, so it is with you. He's talking about the fact that people perhaps won't understand. Since you are eager to have spiritual gifts, try to excel in gifts that build up the church. That's what we need to do. We need to be encouraging one another. We need to be being kind to one another. We need to be noticing one another, because it's then that we can help. When people are facing difficulties, they so often need other people to help, don't they? I mean, we can do so much ourselves. We can try to encourage ourselves, and David certainly did that. He tried to encourage himself, but just the human touch, the human noticing, is what's so important. And I was thinking this morning when I was starting to think about the Paralympics, because I don't know if you remember that the last sermon, the main thing that I learnt from watching the Olympics was how important encouragement was. It was as though God was saying to me, Katie, encouragement is really, really important. And I thought, how much more important it is in the Paralympics. Interviews I've heard, that they've talked about the crowd there, how that has been. And I thought, yeah, some of those Paralympians must have spent hours and hours crying in frustration. All of them will have had loads and loads of time in hospital, feeling discouraged. And then for all the crowd to be there and to be cheering them on, how wonderful that must be for them. And they were saying that it seems that the Paralympics have changed people's attitudes towards disability. It's the encouragement that people are starting to acknowledge them. That's what we need, isn't it? We just sometimes need somebody to be there and say, I know it's difficult for you. Don't we need that? So that, it's only 10:02, but that was what I felt God wanted to say. When things are tough, we know that actually the answer is in Jesus, isn't it? The answer is to seek God. He is always good, all the time, even when we don't understand it, and we don't understand. And sometimes we will never understand why he allows some things. But we have to cling to him. But if we're finding that too difficult, and there are times when we just don't even want to pray, then find something that you can find enjoyment in. And just do that with God. And thank him for that. Start opening up the conversation with him. And as you do, you'll find that it changes things. In the Psalms, so often David started saying, "How long, Lord? I'm fed up, Lord. When are you going to change things?" He started the conversation with God, and by the end of the psalm, he's saying, "I'll trust you." Because he knows the only real answer is in God.